Hello and welcome to the Irish NFL Show. Thank you for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please vote with your fingers and rate, review or subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Every click, every like and every positive review and every additional subscriber really does make a huge difference. It helps others to find the show and we really do appreciate it. We'd also love to see you at our upcoming live show at Buskers on the Ball Temple Bar in Dublin on August 21st with our special guest, Sky Sports NFL analyst Phoebe Schechter. Full details on the website and on our social channels, and tickets are available on eventbrite.ie. We'd love to see you then. Now, on with today's show.
Welcome into the Irish NFL Show. This evening we have our first game of the NFL season, and whilst it's not real-time action, it's not week one, it's preseason Hall of Fame game. Delighted to have Andrew Cunneen back on the show. Andrew has been on before previously with us. Andrew, it's great to have you here involved.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, not real football, I think some people call it. I don't mind. I think I'd watch any of their undrafted free agents kick the heads off each other tonight. It's been a long off season, so I am somewhat excited to watch that. Highlights in the morning, I'd just like to point out, I'm certainly not staying up for that nonsense.
Yeah, the game is live on Sky Sports, as fair as, and obviously a lot of people in Ireland have Game Pass, so they could pick the game earlier this evening. But even next week, when we'll get into it, even preseason games next week, Hall of Fame game, you're often interested to see, because there's so many players that you really don't know who are on the bubble, essentially, trying to make a place in the team. But next week should be a bit more interesting, and more storylines to come next week when we get into the delve into the real preseason games.
Yeah, and just the heartbreak period of the year now, where, you know, you just hope everyone gets healthy for week one. It's total anxiety between now and the first kick, as you well know. Just hoping that all of these many millions of dollars you have spent on these players that will surely fire you to a Super Bowl actually make it in one piece to do their jobs.
I remember last year as a Giants fan, I was so excited about Kayvon Thibodeaux coming into the team. And look, he had a really good season in the end. And then what you find come, you know, a play that wasn't really necessary in a preseason game against the Bengals, and he's out for the first month of the season. I imagine some teams will have similar scenarios come week one, week two, three of the preseason, where players will be lost, maybe for a forward period. But before we get into Chargers, and people will think this is not a coincidence, but it really genuinely is. You are a Birmingham City fan. I knew that before we even kicked off. But the news breaks that Tom Brady, is Tom Brady bored? Because I watched your owner today in a press conference, David Wagner, say but he's not here for promotional purposes. He's going to be heavily involved. And he kind of references the fact that he played in 10 Super Bowls, won 7 of them, and he can bring that kind of content and understanding of what it means to win a season for a team and play in win seven Super Bowls out of 10. But is that what Birmingham City need? Is it more like they need a kind of a commercial aspect to it? But anyway, look, I'm sure you've read about it today. What's your thoughts on it? Because it came out of blue this morning.
I'll tell you what, I'd be far more hopeful about it if Birmingham City called plays in a huddle before we started the games. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. To be honest with you, when you work in an office in Ireland, you're surrounded by Man United and Liverpool fans, and it's very hard to get in edgeways. I'm a Birmingham City fan, kind of finishing 18-19 is the highlight of my year. So to have at least 10 minutes of someone ask me, oh yeah, what's the squad looking like this year? That was my big win. And I'm pretty sure that's about as much as Tom Brady will know about it and feature with it for the rest of the time. There's an awful lot of that going on, isn't there, really? Like the Lewis Hamilton stuff as well with Denver is like, he ended up taking a stake, but really, what interest you got in the sport? I'm sure Brady will be at St. Andrews for a couple of times for photographs. I was hoping we had a player, an American, on loan last year, Trusty, but he's just after signing for Sheffield United. I thought that might be the bait to actually get him signed to the permanent. And that was all I really needed Tom Brady for. He's not even there 6 hours at the time, and he'd already signed for someone else. So his use to me is officially done, unfortunately. It's just PR, Brian, and you know it is. But I've really enjoyed the day that was in.
Yeah, he was at Old Trafford a couple of years ago, so he did get the taste of watching Premiership football, certainly not Championship football, when United beat Spurs and Ronaldo scored a hat-trick that day. But I think, this is a common trend, though. I can't imagine this is the end of it. We've seen JJ walk by into the Burnley model, we've seen the guys and what they've done with Wrexham. I think the one thing I would say with the Wrexham factor is they kind of really evolved in the sense of they got involved what was going on within the community and recognised the importance of the club to the area and what's the programme. It'd be interesting to see if Brady kind of recognised that level of interest. Birmingham City are a big, big club. Let's be fair, people wouldn't recognise Birmingham City as a big club because it's been out of Premiership for years, but they're in the second biggest city in the UK, they are a significant club with a massive fan base. And maybe that'll surprise them, the passion that comes with supporting Birmingham City, whether they're winning, losing, whatever division they're playing. That'd be fair to say.
All of that might be total conjecture. It might come true. I'm not sure. But the funny image I couldn't get out of my head today was he's after divorcing one of the most beautiful people that's ever lived. And I couldn't start laughing or stop laughing, I suppose, at the thought that he's just going to shack up with some old woman in her 40s, like in Hell's Own, and just live in the Birmingham suburbs between now and the end of time. That's what I was hoping for today. As you can probably hear from my voice, I'm not taking it too seriously. But I've just had a good laugh at the whole thing. I just wanted to see how he'd pronounce Birmingham, and he kind of pronounced it correctly, so I was happy. That's my win. But yeah, this stuff isn't going away. It's really not. Where myself and yourself might go to Spain for a week just to occupy ourselves, to de-stress from work, these people are getting involved in football clubs. And, you know, it's a dream for some people, and for others, it's just something they can do on their weekend. It was his birthday today, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, he's 46 today, yeah. He's got me by 1 year, yes.
46 years old, and what did you do? You got involved with Birmingham City. I'm sure his intern was busy editing his videos at 3 o'clock in the morning to post them at 8 a.m. on the dot, by the way.
Absolutely, yeah. I think on my birthday there in March, I went to the Chinese with my wife and kids. Yeah, less exciting than and exciting than buying a football club on your 46th birthday. But
Possibly less.
Absolutely, yeah, until the kids start fighting. But speaking of fighting, I mean, there's probably many a Chargers fan that have fallen out over the course of the offseason over, I suppose, the way in which the season ended. I don't want to act too badly and bring it back to the heartache of last January, because we've all been there, so we've all worn that T-shirt at different times. But Brandon Staley, on the show, I kind of consistently challenge his play calling. You know, I find that he's overly aggressive in fourth downs when he should be taking 3 points. And seeing games, in particular against the Chiefs over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, but he ended up losing by either an overtime or the odd field goal, where if he had just been a little bit more restrained and taking points, they would have won those games. For me, I think Chargers fans are a bit up and down on whether Brandon Staley should have remained as head coach after the way in which the season kind of transpired, which is a defeat against the Chargers. What's your thoughts? Obviously, we're 6 months on, it's a fresh feel for every fan and every team going into the season. But are you convinced that Staley is there for the foreseeable, and you think bringing Kellen Moore in is a huge factor as to whether the season will be deemed to be a success? Because ultimately, I think it's where Justin Herbert, how successful he is, ultimately how successful the team is. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I'll put it to you this way, right? If they don't win a playoff game this year, it'll be Staley gone, and it'll probably be Tom Telesco gone from the front office as well. The Chargers have had a decade-long rap sheet of excuses for the reasons it's gone badly, and the health is a massive factor. You lose so many players. Joey Bosa played in 5 games last year. Keenan was out for 7 or 8. It happens. But that's the NFL. You compile your roster knowing this stuff can happen. And the building of rosters over the years hasn't been good enough. It hasn't been risk-averse. And we've paid the price for it. When it comes down to Brandon, I work in analytics. We won't get into the ins and outs of it maybe later on, but I work in analytics. I don't mind when someone has a stance on analytics and they are consistent. So you live and die by it. But in his first year, Brandon was like, four down, go for it, don't care. And then last year, he was second-guessing himself on the sideline. I kind of irritated me a little bit. You're gone against your principles here. Because you know yourself, right? People have a bet, and they'll bet on an even money shot, and it'll win or it'll lose. The idea is that you are taking a margin markup 100 times, not just once. And then over the course of your projection, you win by a small percentage. And that's big picture stuff. That's what Brandon needs to do. The second you stop going for it in similar situations and then citing the flow of the game, which you can't come into analytics, you can't talk about context in those instances, I think you lose the run of yourself. So I was a little bit annoyed at that process. I would rather have gone for every fourth down I got for none. I really didn't mind. Not everyone will have that factor, of course. I just saw by numbers that I'm always like that. I didn't care whether he stayed or he went. But now you can make excuses. Last year, you could have made excuses this year had he not gotten the Kellen Moore hire than he wanted. Now you have everything. You have your install done. It's a very complex install on the defensive side of the ball. I'd say that right now. He's got some very high IQ players in there. Drew Tranquil was kind of raw, went to Kansas City in the offseason as your Mike linebacker. Sigel Colo and Derwin is in the box. Now you've got Eric Hendricks. And there is not an offensive shift that he hasn't seen in his career. You have, for want of a better term, a more experienced quarterback on the defensive side of the ball now. Frees up Derwin James to do his bits and pieces. There can't be anything like anything that goes wrong now is at the feet of Brendan Staley, and the context won't matter to the owners. The Los Angeles project has been, I don't want to say it's a disaster because we don't know. Like it's kind of gone either way. It is what it is. No team will ever be welcome in Los Angeles to end the race. That's my initial thought and feel, but we're fine with that. Would it have been so much better in San Diego? Possibly not. People like going to Southern California in winter. It's not rocket science. But we'll see with this year. If they don't win a playoff game, everyone is out and the whole thing is scrapped. They've also backed themselves into a little bit of a corner, Brian, whereby they went max restructure on Keenan Allen's contract. They went max restructure on Mike Williams, max restructure on Joey Bosa, max restructure on Khalil Mack. It basically means that two of those four players will not be on the team next year. This is your last chance to win a Super Bowl. And it will be wiping the slate clean fully at the end of this year. You either get to an AFC Championship game or everyone is gone. That's it.
Yeah, I'm going to come to the players we just discussed here and the obviously Kendrick signing, because he was going to those free agency pickups that was, I say, a floater under the radar a bit, like a really good strong signing coming in from the Vikings. And you made very good points on how it's going to support Derwin James and be more effective. Is he, you look at a player like that and you kind of, every season we see a team as a player, and when you look back at how well they played over the season, you say, God, why weren't other teams in for him? Like, he could be player that come in and go, he was a really strong, fantastic side of the charts that really hasn't been discussed. And like, you look at all the previews of the AFC West and various different divisions, and you look at all the players and they're talking about free agents, and he hasn't got really much in terms of exposure. Like, that's, for me, that was a really strong pickup.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the primary, the way the NFL has gone, people look at linebackers now and they're like, right, can you pass cover? Can you go with these tight ends? And he's lost his step. Like, one of my very good friends is a Vikings fan, has been season ticket holder there for a number of years. And he said, look, he's just a bit slower. Doesn't necessarily bother us. I think the Chargers had the worst average run defense per play in the history of football last year. And I was like, if he can just plug gaps and actually align the defensive front when he sees a shift before a snap, that'll do me. They're creative enough in the back end to have sub packages to line up with tight ends. That would be a problem. You just put Derwin on any tight end you want. You can match up with Kelsey, you can match up with any. I'm not too worried about that. Brian Staley's complexities mean that you're never quite sure what way your tight end is going to be doing unless you're in complete man coverage, third down job. But even still, Kendrick's job is going to be to communicate things, because a lot of the motion that was done pre-snap all last year just confused the life of people. And they were relying on Kenneth Murray, who was very raw. They were relying on Drew Tranquil, who's, I would say, he's not that intelligent, but he's just instinctive rather than he's like a high processor. And now that you've got Kendricks in that setup, I just feel like there's so much more IQ on the side of the ball. It could be the key to unlock everything else. That's probably what the signing rang to me when it came in. You probably won't see his numbers at the end of the year and go, wow, you managed to get four picks from the mic spot. He had 6.5 sacks and all these pressures. It won't be like that, but it'll be the pieces around him that have improved based off him doing the basics, I would suggest.
I just want to flip back to the offense, because you did suggest, you know, certain players who could be, you know, beat out their services coming in the next this season if it doesn't play out in the manner which you would hope as a Chargers fan. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, like, for me, there's still jury still out whether people deem Williams to be a number one wide receiver. Like, he's been paid like a number one wide receiver, but whether he's really at that level, is that unfair? Do you think he is, and people are just recognizing the work there? And for Keenan Allen, he was had, as you touched on, the number of injuries in which he's had throughout the course of the last 5 or 6 years, the wear and tear in his body. Were you surprised that he was maintained and recontracted? Because at one stage, it looked like he may have had an opportunity to move on.
I wasn't sure what way they'd go with this. And drafting a receiver in the first round in Quinton Johnson means at least they're planning for after that fact. I think people also forget about Josh Palmer, who came in 2 years ago. He's actually, he's number four receiver. He must be the best number four receiver in the league. He must be. Or maybe Jacksonville, because they've every receiver under the sun down there, don't they? But to that point, you can plan for after the fact. They have planned their window to be now. And if Josh Palmer ends up being your number two in 2 years' time, you know it didn't go right or he didn't go or whatever. Is the jury set up with Mike Williams being a number one receiver? Yes, because his skill set means he can only do certain things. Joe Lombardi tried to kind of feed him the ball. I don't know, you obviously play fantasy football. If you were playing Mike Williams in a PPR league last year, you were going crazy because you were wondering why he was getting so many targets. They were just force feeding him the ball from the X spot. And he was getting 9-10 targets a game, and it didn't make any sense because they were all short intermediate routes. And what Mike does is he jumps go balls on the touchline and kind of makes you defend the width of the field. But I would never say he's a number one receiver. I can't justify that talk now. He's not the best route runner on earth. He's not that quick. He can catch freak balls, but the nature of those throws, Brian, means that he gets injured an awful lot because you're asking him to jump 15 feet in the air and come down with something in between the safety and corner. It's ridiculous. So the long-term implications of paying him like a number one receiver doesn't make any sense. I think they tried to force him the ball, like I said, with Lombardi to try and justify their own long-term plans. Keenan Allen's injuries, they worry me to a small bit. I mean, you don't get less injured as you get older, which is probably the big issue. He's 31 now. It feels like he's been in the league forever, isn't it? Still probably the premier option on third down just because he turns people inside out with his feet. He was never fast. That at least goes in his favour. This is probably his last year as a Charger, would be my initial thought, and then you kind of cut your losses after this. He would still be the... If you're in a situation, you probably say this among any kind of receiver, and third down, he's been one of the best, especially from the slot over the last decade. He's
phenomenal. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I remember one game last year against the Colts, and at that stage of the season, Colts, you know, I pretty much packed it in. It was late, the Monday night game, and like he was... you would think... And when he again had just come back from an injury, he'd be a known factor, but he went up and down the field of them, and there were consistent second down, third down plays where he was getting in position in the middle of the field, taking the yards on and just keeping the ball moving. And it's nothing flashy, it's like 10, 15 yards here, but it's so consistent. And you're asking yourself watching the game, how is the other defense coordinator adjusted? They keep him out of the game and let them go with Mike Reason, let them double team him and see can ever put it into position. So I'm going really into the granular, but like, He has been such a significant player, and he does it time and time again. You think coordinators would find a way to stop it, but they just don't seem to be able to stop it, despite his age of 21.
Particularly Pittsburgh, who every time we played them seemed to put a linebacker on him, which always confused me. I don't really understand that. But no, as a player, he's still the number one there. Mike Williams will never be a number one. I don't know a team, Leicester in dire need, Brian, where he goes and becomes a number one, just because you expect your number one to do so many more things. Like, you talk about Jamar Chase, he's maybe of similar build. He's just so much quicker, and he just runs so many more different routes than Mike Williams does. A nice single player, like, as number two receiver, he's fantastic. But like you say, he's getting $17-18 million a year, which is crazy money. Especially when you go and you take Quentin Johnston, who, to be honest with you, he'll help those two boys. Because, I mean, I put it to you this way, right? You are defensive coordinator, and on a given play, right, you're in empty. You're playing against empty. Herbert's back there. You've got Eckler in the backfield. You've got Everett lined up, spit out, who's a good receiver. Yeah, he's a good receiver. You've got Quentin Johnston in the slot, Keenan Allen on the opposite side at F, and then you've got Mike Williams at X. You're running out with defenders, the double team here. So in that instance, it's great. It's almost like how many different targets can you get him? With Rashawn Slater coming back at left tackle, he's an all-pro type of player. You're hoping that pass kind of run marriage will be a small bit more even this year. Don't know how it looks. It's impossible to tell. Jamari Salyer is coming in playing guard, which is his natural position.
Yep.
You have another year as Zion Johnson, who was taken in the first round from Boston College last year. Corey Linsley still plays at a very high level, and then you've extended your right tackle, Trey Pipkins. There are no more excuses. It really, with Kellen Moore being slightly more dynamic, I suppose me and you are more dynamic than Joe Lombardi, but Kellen Moore being one of the more dynamic offensive play callers in both the pass and the run game, I suppose it's probably fair to say. That Prescott looked like Brett Favre for a while. I just don't see what can go wrong there. It's not going to be execution from Herbert. He deserved every bit of that contract, in my opinion. I don't know what you've always been saying in the show about that, whether you debate it, but in terms of...
No, I think it's fair. Yeah. And we interviewed Zion Johnston a couple of months ago. We had him on the show, and he spoke about two things that really were very clear. He feels the offensive line this season will be much more consistent because of the way in which they've positioned it over the course of the offseason. But he thinks because of the aggressive style that Kellen Moore will have, that we'll be seeing, it'll be more like pass play options, that the ball will be going down the field much more than he wasn't suggesting it was redundant in terms of Austin Eckler. And I kind of get the sense he feels like with Kellen Moore, the aggressive need to get the ball down the field more, despite what they have been doing, will be even more there. And Quentin Johnston is probably is that not a shoot, a string to the shoe here? That, like, we don't know what's going to come of him. Is he a project? Because TCU don't tend to, he comes out at a wide receiver from TCU, and we haven't seen too many of those players come out. You wonder, but it's all relevant to where you go. Like, we've seen players, how many, like, not going to see Mahomes. If Mahomes had been selected by the Bears in that draft, would he be the Mahomes we see today? It's all relevant to where you go. Like, he's in a really strong spot, Quentin Johnston, to go and work with Herbert. So, it'd be very interesting to see any offense plays under Moore in particular.
And you make a good point about who drafts receivers from TCU, and we drafted two of them in the first four rounds. So we actually said Darius Davis, who was, he's the same, he'll be a retire, right? I'm not suggesting he'll be getting the 6th receiver spot rent, that he's there for special teams. But we actually, of the 7 players we drafted, we took 3 TCU players, because he took Max Dobin as well, who was quarterbacks. It was quite funny. And obviously,
and it goes unnoticed. Like the Eagles do, Eagles focus in on Georgia, and they take a lot of players out of Georgia, first round, second round, fourth round, and people are like, "Oh, look at all the great work which the Eagles are doing." I know it's a different landscape, bearing in mind where they are, but it goes unnoticed when teams focusing on a particular comment.
Obviously, being sarcastic here, when I tell you the championship game was Georgia and TCU, we all know how that ended, and we know who we picked between the Eagles and the Chargers to win the Super Bowl. But look, that's yeah, it's just the way it goes. I would say that Quentin Johnson is someone, people often talk about speed, Brian, right? And they think Tyreek Hill, or who just goes for it. Speed, more so now, more than anything, because you can play cover 9, right? And no one's getting behind you regardless. Speed to me is it's horizontal. It's not just vertical. So like you're seeing the amount of end rounds that are done, just these clever little handoffs, these quick screens, and you can go left to right just to get an edge. And as soon as you get the touchline, you're gone. It doesn't have to be this kind of game-breaking speed on a go route, because it's easier to complete a pass of 2 yards than it is to complete of 90 and just get the yak to go with it. Quinton seems like his acceleration is the key, not just straight line speed. I think he ran like 4.5, which is pretty middling for a for what's meant to be a quick receiver. But it's game speed. Like you get the ball in your hands, your acceleration from there. I reckon, I didn't see what a split was from the 20s to the 40, but I reckon that would have been in the top 2% in the nation. It's ridiculous. So it's just speed that they don't have. We're incredibly slow as a team. I think that will change. But Zion makes a good point. Like, if you, Daniel Popper, who's the Chargers beat writer for The Athletic, he's one of the best writers in the country. Yeah. Lucky to have him there. Everything he's doing with a shot plays. It's crazy. What Kellen will do, I know I'm rambling on a bit, so I'll finish it up here, but what Kellen tends to do is he focuses in on your standard runs. A lot of people have been outside zone. That's the Shanahan thing everyone loves. Kellen's like, no, we're ISO, we're trap. We'll draw. Everything is between the tackles rather than going inside it. And then because everyone is so used to those rollouts from wide zone, people are kind of half anticipating play actions now where you have to reset. But actually, if you put a play action right up the gut and it's been gaining 4 or 5 yards of carry, it's actually easier to set your body and just have a quick dunk off to a receiver or play action. Not everything has to be 70 yards in years. That's what I'm anticipating.
Yeah, and like you look at some of the quarterback stats over the course of last season, in some games, and like Brock Purdy's numbers were kind of inconsistent, Brandon, with some of the yards after catch he was getting off the likes of Debo and other players at certain times. And people were reading his numbers out at the end of the game and go, what a fabulous game. But a lot of it is all down to the player more so who caught the ball as opposed to as the quarterback. And just another point, and I'm not just talking about charge, but in general, like you see, like I'm watching footage of Jalen Oye, who goes in the third round and he's a speedster. And like Giants have another player that takes top off the defense. I'm not necessarily he's the one that's going to be taking it off in terms of catching the ball, but it's still another concern for our defense in the secondary to deal with, allowing space in the different parts of the field for them to expose that defense. So like just that part, Johnson gets down the field and takes out his part of the secondary, leaving up for Keenan Allen and Williams to exploit. There's so many options there for him.
The biggest failing of Joe Lombardi is he made the field really congested. And it just, everything looked like you had to thread a needle. Like Herbert's incredibly accurate, but the strength of him was being able to time it. You know, those lovely, say you're playing against cover 3 or you're playing against the cloud, to get it in between the flat and the deep right safety, that lovely little arch, that's one of his best throws. I like that. The highlight ones are when he's getting a slap and he's throwing post routes to Jalen Guyton for 80 yards. Everyone remembers the Tampa Bay play, but like he's got so much touch on it, and it's just more impressive. That's what you're paying him for. You can get in. Look, there's plenty of quarterbacks for the ball 80 yards, but it's not about that. It's about being able to diagnose and be able to find those little gaps, especially with Herbert. And now particularly when you've got 5 viable weapons on any empty play,
yeah,
you're gonna play zone all the time. Everyone's going to play zone against you. Herbert's an operator. He'll find those spaces. So it'll be better.
Needle passes right in there. Some of them are just supreme to watch. Just unbelievable. But a touch on the defense, and you touched on it earlier on in terms of the stats of the run defense. I mean, there's the Chargers fans that would argue, and I know quite a few of them that would say, you know, if it wasn't for the run defense over the course of the last 2 years, we would be, you know, going deeper, further into the playoffs. Is that fair to say that? Because it's something that, right in my Brandon said, was brought in from a defensive standpoint. It hasn't been resolved, hasn't been corrected. They've done their utmost in terms of bringing certain players in. Like, is that still something that you're kind of thinking, is that where this team comes and goes if this doesn't get resolved? Because it's going on for quite a period of time now over the course of the last 3 or 4 years.
I think the biggest failing that people have when they talk about run defense, right? And I talk to this, like 60% of runs are going outside the tackles now to be creative. Yeah. So a lot of it's down to the corners that can tackle. And like that's an art as well that a lot of people just keep forgetting. It's like, oh, this corner needs phenomenal coverage skills. If you have a corner that can't tackle against run plays, you're hammered, like, you know? Because if you get to the edge, you're done. You can chip the edge players, and then all of a sudden you've got the slot corner up against the receiver. Half the receivers in the league can't block, but if they can block better than you can tackle as a corner, it's game over. So there's actually a good situation, a good scenario to highlight that point, right? Chargers starting to periphery corners will be JC Jackson, who's come back from playing. He was a full participant.
He's supposed to be a really strong camp so far.
Exactly. That kind of highlights the good stuff. People forget last year, so he wasn't great in his games. He went for a surgery before the season started to kind of fix something in his knee. It wasn't the same after it. So now he's got a year out. Looks great in camp. That's a positive. Michael Davis, who they thought might get released in this offseason, had a phenomenal bounce back at the end of last year. He was great. So there's your starting corners. And then the battle right now is for the slot corner. So you got Jasir Taylor, who was the sixth round pick from last year, up against Asante Samuel, who's got all the highlight plays. He had 2 picks against Jacksonville, I think it was. And everyone talks about how great he was. But he can't tackle against the run. So it's like he was an absolute trade piece that you dream of, because everyone needs that lurker that can play in a cover through and just follow quarterback's eyes. He's amazing as a corner. Can't tackle. So Brandon's like, I'm going to actually have a competition here, because there's very few teams in the NFL wouldn't just start Samuel and come with what comes with it. Chargers are so poor defensively against the run that now needs to become as big a factor as anything. So you're going to start a sixth round player ahead of your blue chip quarterback just because that's such a weakness. So yeah, like I think that probably highlights the fact that is the primary concern. They reckon they've got the corners to contend with anyone. They probably agree with that for the most part, but it's going to be a sad situation if they can't get things back together.
You'd probably absorb that weakness if you had other players that could take it on board and deal with it. I suppose it's the way law of averages with defensive players, but as you're saying, it's not correct, but it's a great point because you're seeing so many running backs getting it on the perimeter now, and then the tackles are just aren't there. A division as a whole, we're conscious that we're close to closing out the podcast, and I won't really get involved in the stats before and stuff before we close out. But division as a whole, like the Chiefs, again, they kind of methodically held into their offseason. You know, they've kind of, you know, reduced themselves offensively in terms of the offensive line. It seems some players have come in now, and Orlando Brown goes off to the Bengals, one of their rivals. But like, it's easy to say they're the team to beat, but like, where do you see as a whole? Because people are very down on the Raiders. The people are expecting a bounce back from the Broncos with Sean Payton, who at the moment seems to be trying to find ways to motivate other teams are ready to play against the Broncos before we even get into the week one. All of a sudden, week 5 against the Jets is one of the most talked about games. We had a good chat with Colin on our show earlier in the week. But is it the Chiefs with the Chargers close by? Because the Chargers always play the Chiefs tough. At some stage, you feel like they get over the line and get over that hump and put themselves in a position to win the division.
I was at that biggest win I think the Chargers had in Arrowhead ever. The one where Mike Williams caught the 3 touchdowns. I don't really remember. I was actually at the game with my friend who's the Chiefs season ticket holder. I was on halfway for that, which was, I think, was the only American.
Week 3 a couple of years back, wasn't it?
It was week 16, so it was.
Oh, okay.
Right at the point where it was like, if the Chargers win here, they'll run it back for the division. It'll be a game between them with 2 games left or something like that.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, sorry. I'm still going earlier in the season.
Rivers had the 2-point conversion to Mike at the last play of the game to win it. I was at that, and I haven't been convinced at any point that we beat the Chiefs since, so. It's just one of them things. The Chiefs will be the team to beat just because I psychologically believe that they will beat the Chargers, because the Chargers don't believe they'll beat the Chiefs. And it's going to be a situation where they're going to absolute bare minimum win 10 games. So if you lose 2 games to them, then all of a sudden you need to be pretty much perfect outside of it. And it's just unlikely. I would expect bigger things in Denver, because you couldn't expect worse things in Denver. Then there's just so many good players in skill positions that you think he'll maximize that. Fascinating to see what Payton will do with running backs there between as a P-Ryan they brought in, and then obviously Javonte Williams coming back.
Javonte Williams, yeah.
They could be serious. And like the defensive side of the ball as well, they're as good as anyone really. So I don't know. Like I just still, they're probably the team that could fluctuate the most in their record. They could win 4 games or they could win 12. I just don't know with them.
Yeah.
With the Raiders, you can write them off. Just you know yourself. It's just, I can't quite get over the lack of upheaval that happened there. I just, they should have completely shot that and started again.
Well, Derek Carr was a fog and everything. Well, let's be fair enough. They weren't going to sack the head coach. They weren't going to fire GM Ziegler, and Derek Carr was taking the fog away. Even the way, the manner of which, whether you're a Derek Carr fan or not, I happen to do like Derek Carr. I'm probably one of them. But yeah, Colin's always kind of challenged me on that because he feels he's inconsistent. But the manner in which you ended for him as well, the way they kind of just said, look, you're not going to come back in again because of the nature of the contract. From a business standpoint, I get it. They didn't want to pay him a certain thing if he was getting injured. But it was just for a guy who gave him so much service to the team. And then they tried Darren Waller. I'm delighted. Like, Waller stays fit. I think Joins him. Have a player there. But like, Jimmy G, for me, is Waller would be the perfect type of player for, as a security blanket for Jimmy G, because we've seen what Jimmy G, if you put him in a position to try, Jimmy G is not going to go down the field, put, you know, deep throws, but the nature of Waller was 10, 15 yards, 25, keep the ball moving. Like, you get Waller that perfectly to replicate Jitl. It made so much sense.
And they, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they've completely gone away from that idea, which is strange to me. But look, I non-factor, Chiefs will win the division. I just want to win 11 games to be kind of certain that we'll be in the playoffs. Do I think we'll win 11 games? Probably not.
Yeah, and the AFC, you're looking, I imagine, it's 10 wins plus to be in the playoffs. Before we close down with the stats performance, you want to bring us up to speed enough, because the last time we spoke to you, you were doing a few different things, but you've been putting out some great content over the course of the last while. If you want to just let the audience know about the stuff in which you do, because it's quite sophisticated and really good.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to work in sporting analytics. Stats Perform, a lot of people know the brand Opta. So if you watch Premier League and Sky Sports, you'll see the Opta statistics. They're powering all of that. Basically, around the world, we have teams of men and women that sit down and they'll code every single action in a game. That's for whatever leagues we kind of have the rights to, whatever tournaments, organizations want to avail of our services. I could tell you how many touches are the immediate action after every touch that Kyle Walker took with his left foot between the 30th and the 34th minute of every away game, and stuff like that. It's all there in a database, and we kind of have different product lines to utilize those things. So whether it be pro, whether it be media, anything you'll see on Opta Joe, Opta Jean, all the different regions and stuff, we have that internally. I work in the news agency element of it, so I've been a journalist since I was 16, so too many years ago now to talk about my age, but working in the news agency side of it, I can kind of combine the data and put it into our content, which is really enjoyable for me. So you go into a press conference and you're actually asked questions formulated in data and fact, and oftentimes you get a manager to come out with something, so people will want to read the pieces that our clients buy because they're unique. It's not the same old kind of, you know, pre-match ramble that, oh yeah, all the players could be trained and we'll find a statistic that'll give you an alternative news line. We'll put out a video on that, whether it be editorial, whether it be the video offering, like you said, across range of clients. We're used in broadcasts all over the world and stuff. So it's about kind of harnessing those relationships and kind of the perfect marriage between traditional news lines and data. So I find myself in a very lucky position to be able to work with the stuff today.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. You always have some great content around the NFL season. Andrew, we really appreciate you coming on and giving up your time. 6 prime time games for the Chargers this season. So that leads to you being our local choice to come on during the season and discuss those Chargers games come time. Hopefully they're winning games for you. But no, we really appreciate your time and looking forward to the season, having you back on.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.